Hey everybody, and welcome to the Hack My Homestead podcast. This is Sean Mills. Today is Monday, April 10th, 2023. And today I want to talk a little bit about the government's role in fixing problems or helping us to solve problems. And I want to come at this from the perspective of, you know, when should we involve the state? Bigger S or little S, it doesn't matter. When should we involve the state to try to help solve our problems for us? And I haven't really necessarily delved into politics at all, I don't think, on the podcast so far. And I really don't intend to do so today, other than the fact that I am going to touch on a few things that are related to politics, right? So we've got this left versus right dichotomy in the United States. And a lot of folks get so caught up in trying to prevent the other side from doing what they want to do that they don't spend very much time thinking about how to get done the things they want done. So first, let me just clear the air on which side I come down on. And the answer to that question is neither. I'm not sure if I would consider myself to be a pure anarchist, where I believe that there is no place for a state. I think that that is my preference, but I believe that as long as there are other states in the world, that in terms of even if nothing but for to provide for the common defense, the idea of having a centralized government probably makes sense, excuse me, in today's society. And so I definitely believe that there is a role for government as it relates to providing for the common defense in a nation of over 300 million people, in a world with, you know, 100 plus countries and 7 billion people, okay? But generally, I don't think that the government does a good job at most of the things that we ask it to do or that we expect it to do. And that's kind of where I'm coming from in today's podcast is, you know, let's just take the idea of animal control, okay? So most people, you know, if they have a problem with their neighbor's dog, they will go talk to their neighbor. And assuming that their neighbor is reasonable, the two of them together can come to a solution that makes sense for everyone involved. One moment, just got a trailer in front of me that's deciding to throw rocks out into the road, and so got to go around this guy so I don't end up with a busted windshield. PSA, folks, if you have a trailer and you're going to drive on the road, maybe take a broom and sweep the debris off of it so that when you hit bumps in the road, it doesn't, that debris doesn't become obstacles that someone in driving behind you has to attempt to avoid. So back to what I was saying, when there is a dispute related to someone's dog, for example, my personal expectation is that you get with your neighbor, and as long as your neighbor is reasonable, you work out a workable solution. And if your neighbor is unreasonable, then you go figure out if there are any city ordinances or, you know, county laws or even state laws that apply to your situation. So let's say, for example, your neighbor's dog is killing your chickens. Well, that is destruction of property, and there are already laws against that. And so you might go back to the neighbor and say, look, I understand your position. You don't like fences or can't afford one or whatever the case may be, but your dog is now destroying my property, and you're responsible for that. And so I really would like for you to put up a fence or tether your dog or do something to prevent your dog from coming over into my property and attacking my chickens. And if the neighbor is still unwilling to do anything about that, well, at that point, you might consider starting to involve the legal apparatus or the apparatus of the state to solve the problem. So if I was in that scenario, I think my first step would be, well, I'll put my own fence up to protect my chickens, because the protection of my livestock is my responsibility, regardless of whether or not the thing that's coming after my chickens is my neighbor's dog or a coyote, okay? So that's my responsibility. So I take care of my responsibility. But then at that point, and I make sure the whole time I'm documenting everything going on here. If I can prove it was my neighbor's dog, I make sure I have that proof. But at that point, I might file a claim in small claims court against my, neighbor, because I can do that without having to have the expense of hiring a lawyer. And assuming we're talking about something that's relatively small, I would hope that, put it this way, if it was something big, I probably have insurance for that, right? So if the dog tears my, the electrical cables off the side of my house and it starts a fire and half my house burns down, well, I've got insurance that will cover that. So I use the insurance, but I make sure the insurance company knows that it was the neighbor's dog that created the harm, and give them whatever proof. And then it'd be their responsibility to go after the neighbor for whatever legal liability they may have in that scenario. And for me, that's better, because I don't want to have to sue my neighbor. But if we're talking about something small, then, something like going to small claims court and just saying, hey, we've got this issue here. I've tried to resolve it multiple times with the neighbor. He's got no desire to fix the problem, but he has caused damage to my property. And under state law X, Y, and Z-5, he's responsible to reimburse me for the damages. So that would be an option. And that would be using, in that specific scenario, the legal apparatus, the court apparatus arm of the state, to make things right, right? This is what we're going for, is an equitable solution. All too often, what happens is that someone calls animal control the first time there's a problem. And I will say that in the vast majority of situations, if there's a problem like the one I just described, most neighbors are going to be relatively open-minded to a solution. And, you know, you might say, well, the type of person that's going to let their dog roam around and kill my chickens isn't. And look, I would say that the type of person who's not going to take personal responsibility of their pets probably is more likely to push back. But I'd say on the whole, the likelihood of a neighbor. And look, you know, I'm a person that likes having good conversation, and a person that likes to try to get to know the neighbors. And wouldn't it be great to already have a good, warm relationship with your neighbor, so that when and if his dog comes over and kills your chickens, you're starting from a place of friendship? If you have lived in the same place for 10 years and you don't know your neighbors and have never made the attempt to go talk to them, and the first time you're interacting with them on more than a hey, good morning basis on your way out the door is bringing them some problem, which they're going to be defensive. Normally when people do something wrong, or you know, their dog does something wrong, they're going to start off in a defensive stance, because they're probably aware that there's a value to those chickens that were killed, right? And so having the conversation digging the well before you're thirsty is an interesting concept. And essentially the idea is that you lay the groundwork, you do the things that need to be done, so that when you have to go have the tough conversation, you've built up some social capital with that person. You know, so I've got a neighbor who has goats, and I fully expect that as I start planting more fruit trees at the property and start gardening more, or getting back into gardening more, I fully expect there to be times when my neighbor's goats are going to jump the fence or get through the fence, or there's going to limb that's going to blow down in a storm, and you know, make the fence low enough to where the goats can get over the fence, and they're going to get over there and they're going to eat my apple trees, or they're going to eat my garden, right? And so, you know, but I have a relationship with that neighbor. And I think that if that happened, I could go to the neighbor and say, hey, and I will say, the first time it happened, I would probably just go over and say, hey, can you drive your four-wheeler up here? We need to get your fence fixed. I just caught your goats in my garden and all my tomato plants are gone. And I would guess that if I said that, he'd grab his fencing materials, he'd grab his four-wheeler, he'd drive up the hill to my house where the fence is, and we'd fix the house together, and he'd probably hand me, you know, a couple quarts of canned tomatoes or something. Like, that's just, we have a good relationship. And I think that he would come with a peace offering if something like that happened. Now, if I had never dealt with this guy before, and every time there was any problem with the fence line, I always made sure it was his responsibility to fix it, because it's his goats we're trying to keep in. Well, you know what? I've got dogs, and so we're probably trying to keep my dogs out of there messing with his goats or potentially attacking his baby goats as well, you know? But I imagine that if I didn't have a relationship with the guy and that sort of thing happened, he'd be much less likely to show up with a peace offering, with an apology, you know, and look, whatever that thing might be, and maybe he brings nothing, and I don't expect him to bring anything. I think the first time it happens, you say, hey, animals are going to be animals, and I like the idea of my neighbor having goats, and I want my neighbor to have goats, and so I'm not going to call the sheriff and say, hey, there's some random goats that are eating my garden, come over here and shoot them, you know, or come over here and round them up. I know whose goats they are. And so, so again, I think the idea of knowing your neighbors and having a relationship with them makes it so much easier to have the conversations when there's a problem. I can tell you here recently, there've been several bad storms that have come through Tennessee, and one of them blew a tree down on the fence that I'm talking about. And the other one didn't. And you know, the first one, we're out of town, and he just shoots a text message, hey, I'm gonna go up and check the fence line, see if anything happened, you know, just let you know. And then hey, there's a tree down over the fence, I'll have that cleaned up, you know, by the end of the day. And by the time we got home, there was you couldn't even, other than some cut up tree on the other side of the fence, on his side of the fence, you couldn't even tell that anything had happened. And then when a real bad storm came through several weeks ago, he said, and again, we're down in Alabama, you know, he texted and said, hey, I'm going to go, I went up and I checked the fence line, everything looks good, kind of checked your outbuildings and your house too, everything looks good. You know, so he just reached out and said, hey, I was up there checking my fence line and I made sure there weren't any trees sitting on your house at the same time. Thank you. Appreciate that. You know, and so, again, so having the good relationship with the neighbor is key to begin with, to start having the conversation in this specific scenario. And so, you know, but at what point do you bring in the state? At what point do you call animal control on the dogs? Well, I think at the point that you've exhausted all of your other options to resolve it without the state. And even then, you have to understand the fact that you're calling an apparatus that has, you know, I don't want to say it has a bad track record, because the significant majority of state to citizen interactions happen with no problems. The vast majority of those situations are resolved with no problems at all. And so I don't want to sit here and say, you know, oh, well, when you're calling the state, you're calling a man with a gun to come out to someone's house. And, you know, again, the person's going to start off with a defensive stance. And so you have to understand what that means, you know, to an interaction. And so, yeah, it's a tough situation to have. And so, like I said, I don't want to be the person. Oh, well, there's my auto brake on the car. Didn't like that bush that I was backing towards. But that's okay. So, So in that scenario, you know, I don't want to go so far as to say you're inviting disaster. But what I am saying is the likelihood that there's going to be an altercation that results in an officer of the law who's armed shooting someone, whether on purpose or inadvertently, is infinitely higher when the person is on the property than when they're not. Okay, so what I'm saying is that even though the likelihood of that happening is very low, it's not zero. Whereas if you never call the state out to the person's house, the likelihood is zero, okay? And so just something to think about. You know, in that type of scenario, if you call animal control, and again, we might be talking about someone who can't afford to put a fence up. They can barely afford to keep the dog fed because of personal circumstances that you don't know anything about. You know, start with the compassionate assumption. I read a book here recently called Unreasonable Hospitality. And while, you know, the book was decent, the story was great. The lessons in the book were good as it relates to business. But one of the things that I really liked in the story that they told was start with the compassionate assumption. If someone is late to work, don't assume they don't care about being on time. Assume that there was some problem and they wanted to be at work on time and they couldn't because of that problem. And, you know, now that being said, you don't do it so much. You don't ignore reality, but you don't start the conversation off with, oh, apparently someone doesn't own a clock, right? You start the conversation off with, hey, man, you know, is everything okay? Notice you were late to work today. Everything good? We're not overworking you, are we? Okay. And now that person can respond with and be genuine about it too. Don't be, if you can't be genuine with the compassionate assumption, just don't have the conversation. Let someone who is, who's capable of doing that, have that conversation. But it disarms the person. You know, they're in there, they're showing up ready to fight. Oh God, I'm late again. You know, the babysitter was late coming to get the kids, and you know, I can't just leave my 3-year-old at home, and you know, I know I'm gonna have a fight when I get in there because I know how important it is to be to work on time, especially in this X, Y, and Z business. And then they get there, hey, you know, is everything okay? Well, you know, the babysitter, you know, was like, oh man, I totally understand that. Don't worry about it. We covered you. Here's the things I need you to do to get caught up. Boom. Be done with it. If it happens, you know, multiple additional times, look, I think you should consider finding a different babysitter. It's very important for you to be on time. You know, we get started at the beginning of this shift. We're blowing and going. And if you're 10 minutes late, it might take you 40 minutes to get caught up. That means I'm losing an hour, essentially, of productive time. And so I really need you on time. And, you know, if this is caused by the babysitter, please try to find another babysitter because we can't keep losing an hour every day that you're late. I know to you it seems like it's only 10 minutes, but I have to think about it from the standpoint of what it actually costs the organization. Right. So again, and hopefully by the time you're having that conversation, you already have a good relationship with that employee. So you can have the conversation. You can come with some compassion and you can have the conversation without it being a fight. And so again, going back to the example of, you know, the dog killing your chickens, again, number one, it's your responsibility to keep your chickens safe. Now, it's the other person's responsibility to keep their dog off of your property. I'm not saying that they don't have that responsibility as well. But if that dog can get to your chickens, then other things can get to your chickens. And at the end of the day, if the dog isn't, something else is going to. And so, you know, I think having the conversation and almost going out of your way, putting yourself out to try to avoid involving the state, I think is the right way to go. And here's why. Well, there's a lot of reasons why, but here's one of the big ones, for me at least. We don't need more laws. We don't need more regulations. We don't need more city ordinances. And the more people call with a problem, the more the type of people who are willing to run for public office think, okay, now this is my responsibility to fix with a new law. Okay. That's how people, I mean, that's how, you know, I mean, the idea, just the whole idea that making something illegal stops it from happening is, I don't know the word. It's not smart. It's like making a list of 100 rules for a three-year-old, you know? You're raising a three-year-old, your three-year-old's going to do three-year-old things, and you're going to try to prevent the three-year-old from doing three-year-old things by making a rule against it. You know, I've got two kids, and I can remember the dumb rules that I would come up with when I was a young parent trying to figure it out. You know, we're all trying to figure it out when we're young parents. And I can remember thinking, and not even thinking, actually articulating to my wife, well, you know what? We're just not going to do this anymore. You know, that's going to be a new rule. You know, we can't do whatever. I can't remember any of the dumb ideas I had, but I remember having them. I remember that they were dumb. Like, that's the thing that resonates with me in my memory, is thinking that if I made a rule against something that I didn't want to happen, that would be the thing that prevented it from happening. And it just does. It doesn't, you know, humans don't work that way. Now, here's what does work with a three-year-old. Have a conversation with them at their level to try to explain to them why it's not good for them to do a certain thing, and it's better for them to do something different. And show them the different thing, and maybe even show them the thing that you don't want them to do, so that there's no confusion on exactly what conversation you're happening, right? That's a way to deal with a three-year-old. Now, how do we deal with society when it comes to bad behavior? Well, in what I'll call, well, let's just say the caveman times. In caveman times, you would just cast that person out of the community. And the idea of being cast out of a community back then was death. So you were essentially, now, you weren't killing the person. You were just saying to the person, you are no longer allowed to participate in the society that we have built. You can go find another society if you would like. You can go find another group of people and see if they'll take you. Excuse me. But your bad behavior is no longer going to be allowed here in this society. And so you're banished. And if they wouldn't leave, well, at that point you say, okay, because what are we talking about? We're talking about someone who's now not willing to follow the rules of the community, but is willing to take the benefit of being in the community. Well, what benefits are we talking about? Well, potentially we're talking about a limited resource of food. And if we're talking about a limited resource of food and that person taking it without permission, because now they're taking the results of the community without being a member of the community, well, that's literally taking food out of someone else's mouth. And in that type of society, taking food out of someone else's mouth would be, you know, akin to a death sentence, right? If there's barely enough food to go around and someone who's not participating in the community is taking it, well, that's a murder almost. It could lead to someone being malnourished and then getting sick and then dying from that sickness where they otherwise would have recovered, okay? And those are the hard realities, the harsh realities of human existence for a significant portion of our history. And it's why we crave social acceptance and being part of a group so much, because it's almost hardwired into our DNA. If you were part of a group, that meant you could survive. And if you were cast out, if you were not socially accepted, then you would not survive. And so as humans, we crave that social acceptance. We crave being part of a group. We crave, you know, the whole reason why you have quote unquote the left and quote unquote the right is because there's enough people who think a certain way to make a team. And then other people that think that way want to be on the team, because that's what we do as humans. And unfortunately, too many of the politicians out there exploit that to hold on to power not because they've earned the power or not because they've done good things with the power, but because they and their constituents don't want the other side to have the power. Well, isn't that a horrible thought process? You know, you think about a guy like Mitch McConnell, and I think Mitch McConnell is a smart person. I think that he's a good politician. Now, whether being a good politician is a good thing or not is a different conversation for a different day. But he is a good politician. He knows how to play the game. He is a strategist. He comes up with a strategy. He executes it. A lot of the times, that strategy is effective. Okay? But for the past 12, 15 years, at least in my opinion, his strategy has not been to get things done, but to prevent the other side from getting things done. And I think 15 years is too long. Actually, yeah, it's been exactly 15 years since 08, which is when this strategy kind of went into effect. And so I think that it's 100% absolutely a failed ideal when your job is no longer to do things for the people you are sent to represent, but just to prevent the other people's ideas from going into, from being put into place. And so I think that, you know, when we think about, I know I kind of went off on a tangent there, but circling back to the idea of a state and when we bring the state in to solve our problems, the idea that we're going to create a law and that law is going to, you know, the only time that law really does anything is when the law prevents a business from making something in a certain way. And all that happens then is that that thing is either made a different way or a different thing is made. Okay. You know, businesses are large enough to where a law against a business is actually going to have an effect, whereas a law against society is not going to. But yeah, so just to circle back, I know I kind of went way off in the left field there, but the point I was trying to make was that the more that you involve the state, the more likely it is that they're going to try to create a law. And it's a law about something that they don't understand most of the time. Most of the people that are writing these laws that end up getting passed, particularly at the city and county level, don't understand. You know, they're responding to a perceived need. We've had so many people call animal control in the past year that we need a law that says that, you know, your dogs have to be behind a fence. Well, what? Now you're telling me that I have to build a structure on my personal property because I own a dog? My dog's well behaved. They don't leave the property. If they see something and start running off after it and I say stop, they stop and they come back. And I don't let my dogs out when I can't keep an eye on them if they're going to leave the property, okay? So the idea that now I need to go spend, and I've got 10 acres, I need to go spend $100,000 to high fence my 10 acre property up and down through valleys and everything else because you got too many animal control calls? Like, do you see what I mean when I say that the state is not the solution? Now, that being said, because in a society we've created so many different communities, particularly since the internet has been a thing, that you cannot know your neighbors and you can still get that social acceptance by being part of a group and part of a community because you can have your community online. And so, you know, the idea that when you piss your neighbors off, you don't really have to worry about that because they're not part of your social group, you know, that's driven in a large part by the internet. And so, you know, there's going to be a group of people, that are just, they're going to be bad actors. And so in that scenario, because there's not that fear of getting pushed out socially, you know, you might have to resort to the apparatus of the state to fix the problem, to rely on those laws that didn't prevent the problem. They're really just there to identify how someone gets punished, once they are found to be guilty of breaking that law. And so, in that scenario, maybe then you fall back onto the state as the solution for the problem. And, I just noticed that we are coming up on 30 minutes for today's podcast. So I'm going to cut it off there. I think I'm going to continue this conversation a little bit in a little different theme tomorrow. But, you know, generally the theme is, you know, when should you involve the state? And I've used one example. I might get into a different example that's a little bit bigger, like you against a company tomorrow. And, you know, maybe this will be the theme of the week. Just, and again, I don't want this to become a political podcast, but it's something that I'm thinking about right now. And as I continue to try to find the best voice for the podcast, I'm going to talk about the things that I think about. So if you guys have any questions, comments, or things you would like for me to talk about on the podcast, shoot them over to me at Shawn, S-H-A-W-N, at hackmyhomestead.com. And we'll talk to you next time.